Hello and welcome to Differently, a podcast series about equal parenting around the world. My name is Matthew, and I'm really grateful that you're taking the time to listen to this series. Whilst living in Germany, I was lucky enough to take a total of 17 months state finance paternity leave. We're now living in the UK, where this wouldn't be possible, and I've become fascinated by how different parenting attitudes and political support are in different countries. In this episode, we're hearing from Ksenia and Dmytro, who live in Kyiv, about their experiences trying to raise their daughter in an equal way whilst their country is at war. Next up, it's Japan, and then it's on to Finland. Join me as I get to know parents and experts in these countries and hear how people all over the world are trying to do parenting differently. When Russia invaded Ukraine on the 24th of February 2022, Dmytro was in Kyiv. His girlfriend Ksenia was abroad. They'd only met several months before the outbreak of the war. After the invasion, many Ukrainians decided to try and leave the country. Ksenia decided to return.
I came back from Belgium in March or April 2022. Because of my future husband, because I wanted to share everything he was going through in Ukraine, and I was absolutely sure that I need to be here because I belong here, and I won't be able to be the part of this society if I do not share all these changes.
So Ksenia returned to Kyiv, and she and Dmytro lived together in the city as the war raged on. At some point, the topic of children came up. Dmytro had previously come to the conclusion that parenting wasn't for him, or indeed for lots of people.
First of all, I want you to know that I didn't want to be a parent at all. I was living like half of my life and was ready to be child-free, because I believe that most of people today doesn't need children at all.
Ksenia, on the other hand, had always known she wanted a child. And as the war continued, at some point she realized that just waiting until the war was over might not be an option.
I was 31 at that time. And yeah, I understood that that's crazy to have a kid during war. But if in 2022 I thought that it's gonna take several months, in 2023 we understood that it may take 10 years. And I think that then when there is no hope left, you understand that there will be no second chance to live your life, and some of your capabilities, they do not change. So my biological age will stay the same no matter how many years the war is going to last.
Dmytro didn't have a biological clock that was ticking. And in fact, for him, it was the war itself that started to get him thinking about parenthood differently. When COVID broke out, the impact of the pandemic on life led Dmytro to take out a mortgage and buy a flat for himself and his partner at the time. Now, a few years later, the war was having a similar effect on him.
And I thought that if not pandemic, I wouldn't do that. And now if I have the same situation, war, I can go abroad, I can be mobilized, I can like die every day. What will left after me? If there is a time to have a child, it's a perfect time, because when this is all over, I don't know if I would want to, and if my wife will be able to.
For Dmytro, this was a big change from his previous thinking. But Ksenia had a couple more arguments up her sleeve.
First of all, I thought that, wow, this like woman wants a child from me, because she says that I'm so beautiful and handsome and good person. So she doesn't want to waste such like DNA, and it would be a perfect baby. Then I said that you should understand that if I will be mobilized and will go to war, you will be parenting by all by yourself, and if I die, you will be like a widow with a child. Think about it; it's not so easy. And she said that that is also why I'm ready to have a child, because even if you die, that part of you will be with me, and it will be like your part of you in my life.
Ksenia also remembers that conversation. And like all parents, when she thinks back to it, to what she knew or to what she thought she knew about parenthood before any kids came along, she finds herself chuckling a little at that former self.
Yeah, we had a conversation like that, and I said that I'm gonna be able to manage all by myself. I don't know who was that person saying that out of my mouth. I don't know. But yeah, I told everything covered, baby. I can handle this, I can handle that, I can handle everything.
As we've just heard, sometimes not even war can stop you from wanting a baby. And indeed, sometimes it can even help you reach that decision. But what's it like to actually have a baby in wartime? This is what we're going to hear about in the next section. After that, you'll hear about Ksenia and Dmitry's experience of trying to share the responsibilities of having a baby equally, and what that's like when very few people around you are doing so. We'll also hear how the transformation of parenthood is still different for mothers and fathers, even if you are trying to share things equally. Towards the end of the episode, we'll return to the war and what it's like being a parent in wartime. So, back to Kyiv. Towards the end of 2023, Ksenia and Dmitry decided to have a baby. Things went quicker than expected, and a few months later they were reading up on babies, getting the flat ready, and going to antenatal classes. At these classes, Dmitry was pleasantly surprised by the presence of quite a few fathers.
Maybe 70% of attendants were couples, and 30% were like women alone. I even go to the courses when the baby was already born. I've got two courses from UNICEF and one clinic like here on taking care of a newborn, and even like first medical aid for babies and so on. And as our baby was already here, so only I attend these courses, and it was like different because there was a lot of pregnant couples like going there, and here, oh, like mommy whose child is with nurse or with grandma, and only one man, a single sitting there is like me. Okay.
They were lucky with the timing of the birth.
We were happy that at that time in summer, it was July, there wasn't so much shellings like nowadays.
We're doing this interview in January 2026, during a brutal phase of sustained bombing attacks on Kyiv.
I don't understand how like people manage to be in the hospital today when you have like 5 alarms per day, and especially at night. And when we were there, like was a couple of times, but not when we already was given birth, but when we were on check-in, it was air alerts, and you are all going, all the hospital going into the basement. It's cold there. It's like if you gave like given birth, then of course not. If not from the surgery, everyone else like. You are going there, there is like beds and chairs, and you are sitting there waiting like in there is water and some Wi-Fi partially, and that's all, but it's really cold. I don't know how in winter, but at summer it was like really cold.
Even with the air conditioning, the heat must have been stifling. Dmitry tells me it was 36 degrees on that day. But because Kiev turns the hot water off in the city for regular checks in the summer, their baby was washed in freezing cold water once she arrived. The war did bring some advantages, though.
Like, they have 10 rooms for giving birth, and they were saying, like, in normal times, when you're giving birth, like, 8 to 9 rooms are occupied. When we were giving birth, we were second one at that time. So it's, like, not so many children cry, not so many, like, other patients and the visitors, but still, state hospital couldn't be, like, thanked for any good service.
Dmitry and Ksenia had paid for a private room in the state hospital so that they could make the most of that exhausting but exhilarating time. Dmitry's parents drove them back to their flat, stayed a bit and gave them some presents, and then left them to it. After about a week, Ksenia's mum and her sister came to stay for a while. By this time, Ksenia and Dmitry were getting the hang of things, so there wasn't actually all that much for the guests to do.
As you for sure know, baby in first months, like, they're perfect. They're sleeping 17 hours a day, they're like breastfeeding, pooing, like you are washing them and you look like they're sleeping. So it was the times when, like, we all staying on the cradle and what should we do? four grown up persons and this is baby that will sleep for another 7 hours. What should we do?
During the pregnancy, Ksenia and Dmitry discussed how they were going to organize things once the child arrived. Whilst Ksenia would take maternity leave, they planned to make use of Dmitry's flexible working arrangements to make sure she wasn't left alone with the baby. In this sense, Dmitry is lucky with his job. As a consultant for a government ministry, he's largely able to work from home and to be flexible with his hours. Incidentally, this also means that whilst in theory he could get called up, just like every male between 25 and 60, in practice, it's fairly unlikely to happen. This flexibility meant Dmitry could do things like get a load of laundry on, do the dishes, and, of course, look after the baby, and make up the hours around these activities. It meant that Ksenia wasn't just left on her own from a very early stage to look after their child.
And that was a huge support for me. That my husband was working from home and he could participate in all the activities related to the kid. I was trying to remember when was the first time when I went for a walk with the baby in a stroller completely alone, like all by myself. And it seems to me that it has been that it was when she was 4 months or 5 months.
In fact, Dmitry isn't sure that he'd have had a baby if he'd had to have been going to the office every day.
It was like a huge like in favor of deciding to have a baby. Because that I'm staying at home. Because if I was going to office, maybe I said no. You like how? Because I don't earn enough to hire a person like for full day nursing. Like it's pretty expensive in Kyiv, and we don't have grandparents. So how it would be? It was one of pluses.
For Ksenia too, that support, having someone there the whole time for those first few months, that can be so challenging. That seems really to have made a big difference.
I can't imagine what I would do if I didn't have this option and my husband working from home the first 6 months. That was a huge help.
Later on in this episode, we'll hear about how flexibility on its own isn't enough and how it can actually be abused and have a negative effect on gender equality. But first, we're going to look at the challenges of using flexibility in a good way. Because even if that flexibility is there, it certainly doesn't mean that everything is a walk in the park. In fact, sharing these responsibilities usually creates more conflict rather than less. Both of you have a say in everything, potentially. In more affluent circles in some Western countries, it's become almost trendy amongst fathers to say you share things 50-50 when actually you don't. I'm sure many of these fathers really do think that they're doing this, but in many cases, there are whole areas of care that they don't even realize count as part of the whole. So I ask Senya whether she feels that she and Dmytro really do share things equally, or whether it's more the case that she carries the bulk of the responsibilities and Dmytro sort of just helps her out with some of the tasks.
No, I guess we share it equally.
Then I ask Senya whether they've managed to find time for themselves as a couple to just sit and talk about how things are going.
Not really, and I think that for now that's the biggest problem. It gets better from time to time, but that demands constant work. So you need to be in dialogue all the time. Sometimes we're losing this chain of dialogue, and yeah.
I felt a little bad listening to Ksenia say how little time they had as a couple, given that they found the time to conduct 3 long interviews for this episode. But in fact, our final episode was one with both of them, and perhaps this conversation could be counted as part of that chain of dialogue, because on several occasions their answers developed into exchanges between the two of them. They talk about those difficult moments where the two of you have different ideas about what to do, and it's just so tricky to decide together on a course of action.
I think it's not so easy, and at most time we like doing it by trying and mistakes, because it's hard. Like each of us have a different opinion on how things should be done, so it's often can end with an argument without a proper resolution, you know.
Like, because okay, we're not trying to find a resolution, we're just arguing, forgetting that the idea is to find a resolution.
Dmytro then mentions a situation where he did a certain amount of childcare in the daytime and felt that meant he could get to watch a film in the evening to recover. But in the end, he didn't get to watch the film. And when you're at the limit, even small things like this can be difficult to accept, and they can lead to frustration.
You could ask before, you could like thought about it at the start, saying that, okay, I'm going for a walk, and you
but
are
that
like...
That sounds like you're expecting that, yeah. I'm going to make a conclusion, yeah, that if you've done that before, then you are willing to watch a movie.
That's him.
But yeah, that should be said out loud, because this you're guessing. You're playing this guessing.
That's a hard condition, because when you have a nanny, you can like schedule yours that like from that to that, you are doing this, here is your money, and okay. When you have a partner, you can't have an Excel Excel table where each one puts activities and timetable, you know.
Let's try to.
During this conversation, Ksenia and Dmytro went straight on to imagine what the near future might be like when both of them are working and there's a child to look after. This clear awareness of what might be in store for them as a couple, I think this is pretty unusual amongst parents, and it did really impress me.
And then in the future, when Ksenia will return to work, it will be like expecting or like measuring whose work is more
important,
who will be taking a baby from kindergarten at this day or that day, who has an evening free, and so on. So it's
for those of you who don't know, yes, this is exactly what equal parenting can look like.
it will be.
We had so many time. We had so many time to learn how to do that, and we're still discussing that. The day comes when we will need to discuss that. Why didn't we still try to make an Excel table?
When my wife and I had our kids, we were living in Berlin, in Germany. And it was pretty normal amongst our friends for the dads to take several months of paternity leave and to work part-time in order to be more involved at home. I knew this wasn't normal for everyone, but to be honest, it kind of felt normal to me. In our bubble, it was perhaps even expected to an extent. We all live in bubbles to a certain degree, and so I was curious to hear about Ksenia and Dimitra's bubble in Kyiv. They're clearly well-educated and could afford a private room in a hospital for their daughter's birth, although, as Dimitra tells me, they can't afford the amount of nanny support that some couples can. So I wondered, what role did other parents play in their lives? How did they support each other in the day-to-day challenges of sharing family duties? So I asked Ksenia whether they have friends who are going about parenthood in a similar way, expecting this to lead into a larger conversation.
The majority of couples I know, they have the model where daddy is busy with work, and he can only be with us when he's free from that. So no.
In my conversation with Ksenia, I didn't manage to work out how to approach the topic again. But 2 days later, with both of them, I did bring it up again. And then Ksenia said something quite interesting. Something about what her female friends with a more traditional setup actually think about their approach.
They just find it a bit surprising. But as my friend says, if it works for you, then you're lucky. This is not the case for me. But this is interesting. How does your husband accept that? Is that comfortable for him? So she's quite worried about my husband, not about me.
Here, it felt like we were starting to get to grips with some of the forces that are at work here. As the conversation continued, Dimitra initially suggested that it's the lack of flexibility that stops fathers from being more active at home. But then he reflected that perhaps it runs deeper than that, and that women are, on some fundamental level, seen as being responsible for babies and young children. Finally, he revealed a secret tip that some men share with others to help them get out of doing more at home.
When I say, like, to my parents or grandparents that we are sharing responsibility, but it's harsh, it's like demanding. So they are saying, like, if you are tired, like, or you can always go to work, left it to Ksenia and it's okay. If Ksenia is tired, just hire a nanny or ask granny if she will come and help. And they think that it will be like key to all the challenges. My colleagues saying, like, you are like, if something is challenging, like, just come to work, say that you have some meetings, and let you, like, do it like all our
deal
wives
with that.
Like all our wives do. I don't know.
Say that you have some meetings. It's the modern professional father's get out of jail free card. And thinking about it, it's an excuse that emerges precisely from the post-pandemic world of flexibility. So this flexibility, it can be a blessing for gender equality, but it can also be the opposite. So ultimately, I guess what I mean is, flexibility by itself is not the whole story. It's about the men and women themselves and what they do with this flexibility. And what Dimitra has decided to do with it has made him unusual, even amongst his friends.
Funny situation, I was at the birthday of my friend, and there was a lot of our, like, friends who came with wives. And all of them have children older than like than our. And when guys like was trying to joke about tell us Metro how it is to be a young father, you just have your baby. It was like 8 months old, I think, at the time. And I just joked back that it's not you who I should be speaking with. I should be speaking with your wife, because with the level of involvement of myself with a baby, you don't understand me there. it's tough because you have no such experience at your parents' level or at your peers' level, so you can only try to like to divide it with your partner, and it's not a simple thing.
I wondered what Ksenia made of these stories of Dimitro's. What did she, as a mother, think of these dynamics amongst fathers? Did she think it was true that inflexible work arrangements were preventing Ukrainian fathers from doing more care work? Or was it actually all just convenient excuses, and they didn't want, or perhaps didn't allow themselves to want, to be involved in the work at home?
Yeah, I think that's an excuse. Like Dmitry said that his co-workers are giving him advice to say that he has a meeting. I think that is something similar to that you're saying that your husband or your partner is saying that I'm sorry, I'm very busy, I can't take care of the baby right now, but let's on the weekend. So I would say that for the majority of men, they don't have the desire, because in most cases they do not know what to do with the baby, especially when this is a small baby, a newborn.
But what about mothers? Would they want more help from their partners? Or are they perhaps also slightly complicit in maintaining the status quo?
Some of my friends, they would be happy if the partner would be more involved, but they are very careful about saying anything to a man. So he can say that this is your stuff. Why should I be doing that? Sometimes you just feel that this is not the type of conversation you can have with your partner. So,
In our tradition, there are a lot of a lot of parents saying to their daughters that your job is to take care of your child and your husband.
And your husband, yeah.
Because if you will be saying, I'm tired, please take the baby, I want to have rest, he will
doing everything I do.
Find another woman more strong and left you with your child all alone. So don't overuse his
Don't you dare.
And I know such women that are saying you are really risking if you're not making a good wife, a good mother. What a wife you are! It's a bad situation.
Making the shift to equal parenting is also about rejecting this power that many men have, the power that comes with financial domination. But how do you do that, particularly when so many around you continue to conform to it? I couldn't resist, so I asked Ksenia, if this was such a real risk, such a prevalent one, how come she wasn't afraid of Dmitro running away? How is she able to let him in, like she has done, letting him take over tasks that other mothers don't feel they can ask for help with?
I just always felt support, and I think that I feel safe to talk about anything. This is why as we discussed during pregnancy, that Dmitry is going to participate in that. So.
And then Ksenia went straight on to show how much support she provides for Dmitry.
I'm trying to ask him from time to time if that's too much, because it seems to me that he's doing too much. But such conversations, they do not lead to any efficient conclusion when we sit and make this Excel sheet. So I hope that you're not lying to me when you say that you can do that. Because
and here I should add that it was me who proposed and who find and hired a nanny for our daughter. If Ksenia is asking, it doesn't matter that she has a full capacity of strength to do it. She's just afraid that I'm on the low level of energy. But I am understanding that if I say, oh, sure, I would love to for you to pass half of my responsibilities back. But I believe after that, I will be living with a zombie, you know. So I think, okay, you should be add someone third in our party to take care to so we have less more time for ourselves. And that was me who was proposing that.
Sometimes it's too much for two people, and it needs someone to go out and find a bit of extra help. It needs a Dmitry, but it also needs someone to notice these things and to address them, to ask the other person how they're really doing, or to suggest that maybe it's getting too much for them. It needs a Ksenia. Someone, in her words, to continue the dialogue. Becoming a parent has always meant change. But when you decide to share the responsibilities of parenthood more than people traditionally have done, that change, well, it becomes different. Perhaps for fathers, it's a more obvious difference, a bigger change to the past because of the greater degree of involvement they have. But actually, I think the transition to gender egalitarian parenthood is harder for mothers than fathers. For fathers in 2026, the bar is still pretty low. I mean, just change a few nappies, be the primary caregiver for a couple of months, and you're celebrated as some kind of role model. For mothers, everyone expects them to be doing everything anyway. It's like there's nowhere to go for mothers. So I think it's much less clear what mothers as individuals can be doing to improve gender equality. Also, as Ksenia makes clear, having a partner around who is able to come and help with many of the physical tasks won't necessarily help when it comes to the emotional turbulence of negotiating motherhood. In fact, the very first thing she told me about in our conversation was this transformation as a mother and how fundamental it was.
This is something you try to get ready for. You try to... you go and you check some online courses, you learn how to take care of the kid, but everything just fades away when it begins for real, when you have the baby and you just forget everything you learned. So at first I was... it felt like I'm losing my mind, I think, at first. But it got better. So this is true, what everyone's saying. The biggest amount of people, they say that it gets better with time. And now I can say that, yeah, they've been there and they know the truth. Yeah.
This transformation of becoming a parent is also something that doesn't happen in isolation, away from the rest of the world. So as a couple, you can decide all you like to share things equally, or to try to, but the rest of society, or at least most of it, will still see the mother as the primary caregiver. And then there's our upbringing. Because even if you want to raise your kids in a gender-equal way, you were probably brought up with more traditional expectations around what it means to be a mother or a father. For Ksenia, the pressure to be a perfect mother was huge.
Becoming a parent, that's a hard process. Maybe that happened in my case, but I was sure that I'm gonna see my baby for the first time. And I'm gonna become a wonderful mother from the very first day. I'm gonna understand all her needs, why she cries, what she needs, how can I help? But that didn't happen for quite a long period of time. And I was becoming nuts because of that. So I felt like I'm not her mother. Acceptance was rather long and hard. And when I tried to concentrate on her, trying to understand her better, trying to find a key to her personality, that was a huge work, because at the same time, I think that I was healing my inner child as well. And better understanding not only her, but myself as well.
Dimitra's transformation as a father has also been a process. But it's involved different feelings, both different doubts and different responses to them.
For me, I don't think that I made a mistake, because for maybe first half a year or 8 months, when my friends were asking if you could go back, would you change something? And I was saying that totally, of course, I wouldn't have a baby if I can't have a chance. Now I think that nope, it's a great thing to like. That happened to me, and it's really I think it's really like helping me to become a better version of myself, and I'm really interested to see what will become of my daughter. It's like I think that the older I will become, the more important this person will be in my life. And it's like, I don't want to say that children, like, that you are living for your children, because it's also a bad thing when you like. And your life is so poor that you are like only getting good emotions from life of your children, but it's something that you always want to be part of and to see what's becoming of it, to help it, to shape it, this person.
Dimitra's take on the transformation is interesting, I think, because despite their decision to share the care responsibilities for their child, Dimitra is clearly approaching parenthood from the role of a provider in the financial sense.
I don't think that it was such a huge transformation as for Ksenia, because as a man, I was like used to take care of someone. Yep, I already taken care of my wife. So like for me, it's like adding one more person about whom to take care of. And it's not like such a huge transformation when you are cared off, and then you should become a parent by yourself, and you like now it's not someone caring about you, but you are caring about someone, and you are like maturing. Because of course there are many couples where the man is also like a big baby. Yep, when you are saying that you are married with your mother, and man. Can't clean his clothes, can't wash or can't cook, something like this. I like always was self-sufficient. So for me, it's my relationship with Xenia was always trying to be like her like guardian or something like this.
I think there's a way in which Dmytro is perhaps overlooking the ways in which Xenia is also caring for him, and indeed always has done. Even returning to Kiev in wartime in order to be with him. But it's also indicative of the expectations that society, and Ukrainian society, does place men under, what their role is and what their role isn't. Dmytro then goes on to give an account of parenthood through the various skills that you learn through the many, many phases of life with a child, which shows that he really is involved and getting stuck in.
So for me, it's not so transformational in the part of taking care of someone or be like thinking about someone every day, but it's about managing. It's about a lot of new skills that you should know, and it's like every day you learn something new that you should use for a limited period of time. Never ever in my life I will be putting diapers on anyone. I hope, except myself maybe. But you should learn how to do it properly. And there are lots of such activities with babies that you are learning, and it will be for a limited time and then
wasted.
I think it's really making you more flexible, more stable, more hard to impress with something. And after that, you're becoming a really less stressful person. So now I understand my colleagues that have two kids or three kids, they are also much more calmer at work than I am. And I understand that's what giving you parenting, you becoming a more calmer and more experienced with some not predictable activities.
I was also interested to hear that Dmytro is already thinking about the effect that his way of parenting is going to have on their daughter. Earlier on in my conversation with him, he told me he had a very traditional upbringing, in the sense that his father was out all week and he only saw him at the weekend. Even though their daughter is only 1.5 years old, Dmytro can tell that her sense of what fatherhood is will be completely new.
From the beginning, I was totally pro parenting, both equally. And of course, it's really, really interesting to see which difference will it make, how my daughter will be different from me when she will be having a father that always with her. Every day she's seeing him from the cradle straight to 12 hours per day, she will be totally different.
When my wife first had the idea for this podcast, I initially became interested in couples around the world who have succeeded in organizing everything 50-50. But I soon began to feel that such a project could actually end up putting people off trying to be more equal in their parenting. Most of us fail at achieving perfect equality, and there are good reasons for that. And thinking about it, I realize that these stories are actually more interesting and of more help to people trying to make the change. Because change is uncertain and involves difficulties and reckoning with those difficulties. With this podcast series, I also wanted to acknowledge the differences between different countries and where they are in terms of parenting. So I asked Xenia what she thought Ukrainian society could do better in order to help more parents share familial responsibilities equally.
I think that the change should begin at schools and kindergartens as the very first point. Kids should get sexual education at school. They should understand better their body and have respect to another sex, boys towards girls and vice versa. So I think that something needs to be changed in the education in Ukraine.
She also suggests more paid leave for parents and educational programs at work. Oh, and one I particularly liked.
More dads talking about parenthood on social media.
Time to get onto TikTok, I guess. Finally, she points out how lucky parents are who are having kids at the moment, that they have so many resources to help them on their journey as parents. And she encourages them to make the most of these opportunities.
And I'm very happy that right now people are reading and people are trying to better understand how the kids' psychology works. So that's very important as well. And I'm very happy that I have all the resources in the world and all the help in the world to try to figure out what's not working and try to become a better parent.
As I already mentioned, these interviews took place in mid-January 2026, whilst Kyiv was heavily under attack. In that particular week, Dmitry and Ksenia had electricity for only 4 hours each day. Our interviews were at 4 p.m. Kyiv time, and with no other lighting on in their flat, as each of our conversations progressed, the twilight set in. And by the middle of the conversations, I could only see their faces lit in the darkness from the screens of their phones. Ksenia told me they had made sure to charge their batteries for the interviews beforehand. In the first section of this episode, you heard about what it was like to become parents in wartime. In this final section, the focus is on being parents in wartime. How having a child that you're responsible for changes the way you relate to the war going on around you, and how the war affects the children themselves, of course. One positive effect of the war is that it seems to have changed the way Ukrainians relate to parents in public spaces.
I think that people are kinder now, especially to pregnant women and to women with kids, but maybe that's my case only, I don't know. But I can say that people helped a lot during all stages. I couldn't even imagine that people in my country can be so kind to a completely unknown person. So yeah.
Dmitry reckons it might be because people are worried about the demographic trend and are reassured to see people still having children. Particularly when out and about and pushing a pram with their child in it, it seemed to happen fairly frequently that people would go out of their way to help them.
Everyone is eager to help. Like we was going just yesterday in the subway with my wife and with cradle. Some woman was saying to me, I'll hold the door for you. And I said, I have a wife for that. She will take care of the door. And she said, oh, I didn't notice. So, okay, I will hold it for both of you. So no, everyone, I think they all are deeply moved that in times of war, they see small children down. And so our demographic situation is maybe not so disastrous as it seems.
But it's still clearly pretty noticeable that there are fewer children being born. Dmitry tells me that he was expecting quite a lot of difficulty getting a place at a nursery for their daughter, but due to the war, there's simply far more supply than demand at the moment. Nevertheless, only the private nurseries are equipped with their own generators and bunkers, so the war can still affect the ability of the nurseries to provide childcare. Ksenia tells me that on the one hand, the challenges presented by the war are exacerbated by the demands of a child. For example, Not being able to rely on a fridge is a bit of an inconvenience as an adult, but when you're also caring for a child, things like this become a lot more stressful. Because just getting the things done to keep everyone fed and clean becomes significantly harder. On the other hand, it can help.
That distracts me from all the difficulties we're struggling with right now. Because I have a routine, no matter what happens. I need to do that every day. I need to take care of her every day.
Which isn't to say it's not nice to get away from it all. 1 month before we spoke, Ksenia had taken their daughter on a trip out of the country to visit relatives. And being able to have a break from everything going on in Kiev clearly did her good.
When I left Ukraine, I just felt so peaceful, enormously. I couldn't even imagine that this works like that. Some sort of tumbler that just takes off all your troubles and all your fears for some time.
This trip also produced a very particular moment, and both Dmytro and Ksenia mentioned it to me independently of each other in my conversations with them.
A month ago, my wife was visiting her sister in Europe, and she like said that one day there was like a lot of airplanes in the sky and even helicopters. And she said that I realized that my baby, for the first time, see a plane in the air. She was like pulling her finger and oh, because you're raising your child and you don't understand that it's not like you were raised.
With the airspace over Ukraine closed, their daughter had simply never seen a plane before until she left the country. In our very first conversation, Ksenia told me she was proud to have produced a Ukrainian child, and that she felt a sense of patriotism in this. During the interview a couple of months later, I asked her whether she still feels that way. In her answer, the anecdote with the planes also pops up.
That still remains, but I started to think that my kid can as well have a normal life. When I saw her checking planes in the sky for the first time, it almost made me cry because, I don't know, maybe she's not going to see that in a lot of years. Being patriot... shouldn't make her suffer. I don't know. Right now she's rather small, so she doesn't understand. Yeah, the air raids and all that. But I'm starting to think if this can work when she gets better, or when she gets bigger. So. I'm constantly thinking about that now.
Dmytro also makes this point during his interview, that in some ways they don't have it as hard as they could do.
And of course, for those who have kids like older, the war is totally harsh, and it's easy for you when you have a baby and the rockets are like flying over your house. But it's harder when your child is... knowing that there is rockets and it's not a lightning and it's Christ and asking you why is this happening. So for sure they like, maybe if they know that the war will erupt, they will think twice before.
But with something between stoicism and dark humor, he manages to see something positive in it.
But as many Ukrainians saying that it will bring a really, really resilient future generation of Ukrainians, and they will be so tough that we don't know what will could affect them more than their childhood.
I'm sure it's true that the current generation of children in Ukraine are developing an unusual resilience. But the possibility of future wars, it now looms over all these children, as it does more and more in many European countries and further afield. And all of a sudden, the gender of your children can once again mean the difference between them being called up to defend their country or not. In some countries, military service has been expanded to include women too. But in most, gender is still the fault line of obligatory military service. As a Ukrainian, Ksenia is far ahead of the rest of us Europeans in having to deal with these issues. And I asked her whether the idea that her daughter's gender meant she would potentially not be called up in future conflicts made a difference to her.
Of course, that was my first thought during pregnancy when we didn't know the sex. Because we suggested that that's a boy, and I was terrified. I thought, what am I gonna do if that's a boy? It also has an impact by my mom, who was saying she has two daughters. So she was all the time saying, I don't know what to do with a boy. And she said that for so many times in my childhood that I was believing that that's my thought as well. So I was just keeping that inside of me, I think, during all those years. And yeah, I was hoping that my baby is a girl, not only because of the military service, but also because what to do with a boy.
But although these thoughts about the future do occasionally preoccupy Ksenia and Dmytro, it seems to me that the main way the war impacts parents, indeed all citizens, is the air raids and the trips down to the shelters, often at night. Dmytro described it to me, and whilst I listened to him, I tried to envisage what it must feel like on top of the exhaustion and stress of looking after a small baby.
As always, when cold comes, Russians begin to bomb our electricity, our residential buildings and so on, and it was like every week, even every 7 days, every 10 days, there was like heavy shelling, and we were going to a subway. It's not far from us, but still it's cold. You should take clothes on, take the cradle, or take the and go to the subway. And there are a lot of people, a lot of dogs, children crying, dogs are barking, like every announcement comes. So our daughter at the time can't sleep at this like conditions, and we are like sitting there on the chairs because we don't have like something to lie in. We were sitting on chairs, and she doesn't sleep. It's night. She like begin to cry. She like in 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, you like feed her with breast and trying to calm her, but eventually you like saying, okay, maybe explosions are over, the air alert are not off, but maybe we should go back home and try to sleep. Yeah, because you don't know what hits you more. Yep.
When I started researching for this episode on Ukraine, it was clear that the war was going to be a factor. But I was concerned not to let it overshadow Ksenia and Dmytro's views and experiences about equal parenting. After all, this is a series about couples trying to share the responsibilities of parenthood more equally, not about war. In the next episode, for example, I'll be looking at work-life balance in Japanese society. But after my conversations with Ksenia and Dmytro, it became clear to me that, for the moment at least, the war dominates everything, including their efforts to share their parental responsibilities equally. So it felt right to begin this episode with it, and it feels right to end with it too. That said, I feel like it's also true that Ksenia and Dmytro's commitment to each other and their decision to share parental responsibilities and both be very involved has probably helped their own resilience during this challenging time. I hope that sometime very soon peace will come and they will be able to enjoy the wonderful benefits of equal parenting without the hardships of war. In this final extract from my conversation with the two of them, Ksenia returns to the topic of the air raid shelters. And for me, this sums up the challenges they're facing at the moment, and it also captures the empathy and upbeat humor with which they are supporting each other through it.
I think that deep inside, each one of us is thinking about that, but you're all the time trying to kill those bad thoughts and trying to think that this is not going to happen. But the best solution is to go to the shelter, which we're not doing. And I understand that sometimes you are choosing whether you will be 100% safe in the shelter or your kid is gonna be sleeping at night and feeling okay. So when you see how your kid is silently, sweetly sleeping
in a warm bed
in a warm bed, and you understand that right now you can take her out of this bed and she's not gonna sleep maybe till the morning, you're not willing to ruin this. Sometimes you hope that the price is not gonna be
so
really high. Yeah.